It's the Daily Gopher Football Podcast. We are back. The band is back together. I am Jeff Frick. J.D. Mill is back this week. Pretty excited to talk about your undefeated Golden Gophers. Hate week. A lot of good stuff coming up on the pod today. Patrick Vince from Blackheart Gold Pants to the popular Iowa blog will join us in the second segment to talk all about the rivalry and how a terrible Iowa's been so far, which is always fun to talk about. J.D., good to have you back. Good to have an undefeated Gophers team. And let's be honest, it's good to have hate week, isn't it?
Good to be back. It's good to for the Iowa Hawkeyes and their fan base than I do for the Wisconsin Badgers. So this is the biggest week of the year as far as I'm concerned. And I could not be happier with all of the hate coursing through my body.
It does feel, it feels good right now. Never felt so good to hate. It's Iowa week. It's a big one. The tables have turned. We'll get to that, I'm sure. I don't know about you, but it just feels strange to feel like the Gophers have a good chance in this one where we're not feeling, you know, we're down in the dumps and it's another two, looking like a two win season or whatever else. And it's, oh God, here comes Iowa and their ridiculous fan base again. But to actually feel like I feel good about the Gopher team, I feel good about their chances, even with them going to Kinnick. It's a bit of a strange feeling, but it's one I would certainly like to get used to.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's a fun time to be a Gopher fan, which we haven't been able to say for a couple of years. And yeah, you know, we're 4-0 and we haven't necessarily beat the best teams in the country, but I think we've gotten better each week. I think we beat a good Syracuse team with a very good offense. And obviously the Hawkeyes are down 2-2. They've lost two games at home, have not looked impressive even in their two wins. I think we have a good opportunity to be able to go in and take a game. And, you know, unfortunately the Vegas odds makers don't agree with us, but should be fun to see how this one goes.
Yeah, I was floored by that one. I thought maybe, you know, it'd be Iowa plus three or, you know, getting 3 points at home or something. It's a toss up game, which is fine. It's a rivalry game. They've been running the ball a lot better the past couple of weeks. But to see Iowa with the six, I guess Iowa fans are just going to be storming the ticket windows to place bets on them is what they're thinking. Cause I like the Gophers plus six. I think that sounds like more than reasonable odds to me.
Well, and actually, the line even moved a little bit, overnight, and it's actually at 7 now. So, which is interesting because, like from what I've seen, over 75% of the money's been bet on Minnesota. So I'm not sure what's going on with the line, but you know, they used to say that Kinnick was a 6-point swing as far as the spread was concerned. So, you know, when that line first came out, I thought, okay, you know, maybe with Kinnick being at Iowa, I could see where that line would come from. But, you know, like I mentioned before, I was not the team that they have been in the past at Kinnick, especially this year. So that spread still does, I still do find that spread a little bit interesting, but, you know, that fantastic. One more spread for the Gophers to ruin for the Hawkeyes.
Yeah, I think every fan base so far in the four games has looked at the Gopher team and said, oh, we should beat them. We should take care of them. And it hasn't happened yet. We talked about things we get used to. How about the defense? You've been a Gopher fan longer than I. You've been around it longer than I. Do you remember a defense really playing the way they did Saturday night against Syracuse? And, I mean, you know, looking at the numbers, I know the competition hasn't been juggernauts. You know, they haven't played USC. They haven't played anybody big time. But you know, kind of built its way up from UNLV to New Hampshire to a Western Michigan team that's a solid MAC school, and now Syracuse, which I still think is a bowl team, could get to 6-7 wins. And that defense, it looks good. It looks dominant at times. It's just something I'm not used to seeing here.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. And I was actually thinking about that today myself. And I don't remember, you know, certainly – at no time during the Mason years did the Gophers have a defense like this one seems to be showing. You know, and before that, you know, I think some of the older Gopher fans talk about some of the defenses back in the 70s, but, you know, in the 80s, 90s, and you know, the majority of the 2000s, I don't think we saw any kind of defenses that really were able to dominate the way that this defense did on Saturday night. Even in 2008, the Ted Roof year, where, you know, the Gophers did have a pretty good defense that, you know, did a serviceable job of keeping us in games. They never dominated games the way that this defense did on Saturday night.
No, and it's, you know, sitting with my wife and brother-in-law and their family, it's just saying, like, I don't remember seeing a defense where they, you know, it gets to third down and you expect them to sack the quarterback. You expect them to knock it down, to turn it over, to, you know, to force them to punt and get the ball back. And it was just happening time and again. It was something to see. I mean, that, we've talked for years about a defensive line that's going to finally step up and play well, but, you know, the tackles are going to do something to get pressures off the end. I mean, we're seeing it. I mean, Will Height's been a force. You know, Hageman's been forced in double teams. The guy who I want to call Amula Amalafala, or however you pronounce his name, he's got a couple sacks. I mean, it just seems like whoever they put out there are doing a great job of getting to the quarterback and getting pressure.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that is really the ability to get into the backfield and make trouble for, you know, running backs or specifically a quarterback. And really they've been able to do it. You know, it's not that they aren't blitzing. That certainly is happening, but they've been able to do it without having to really send the house. And, I mean, that makes everybody else's job easier. It makes the linebackers be able to, you know, cover, it makes it a lot easier for the cornerbacks to do their jobs, hurries the quarterback, forced them into bad decisions, as we've seen the last couple of weeks. So, I mean, everything starts up front, and that defensive line is really doing everything it can at this point to make things hard on the opposing quarterbacks, and it's really made the difference in what this team can do from a defensive standpoint.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me. I think I saw it on Gopher Sports today. They were saying that the defense through four games has already passed their turnover totals from all of last year. I think they had 10 or 11 last year, and we're already at 11 or 12 in that number through four games. I mean, it's pretty incredible, but it shows what getting pressure and what forcing an offense to do what they don't want to do, what that can do for your numbers and for the rest of your defense, and just how it makes everybody better.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the Gophers are giving up less than 17 points a game right now, which, you know, is top. I want to say it's about top 30 in the country. I'd have to double check the stats. But I mean, outside of, you know, that triple overtime game against UNLV, where it was just back and forth for those three overtimes, you know, really have been even better than that. You know, giving up the 23 to Western Michigan was legit. Like I said, the 27 to UNLV really was aided by the fact that we had three overtimes there, but 7 to New Hampshire, 10 to Syracuse, and even that 10 to Syracuse, that, you know, that last touchdown, you know, I don't want to call it garbage time, but they didn't score a touchdown until the last 45 seconds of the game. So, I mean, even if you go beyond the numbers and the stats of what this team has given up, it's even their performances have been probably even a bit more dominating if you've actually seen the games.
Yeah, it's been fun. Well, boy, it gives you hope for the season and certainly for things to go as so many of these kids are coming back. Offensively, another solid performance from the Gophers. I know scoreboard-wise it didn't look like much. They only had 231 total yards offense. Part of that, though, is the sack total, as Shortell got dropped for a couple and a big loss on that. But, he looked okay. He did enough. He was, 16 to 30, sacked twice, but no picks, no touchdown. Was robbed of a touchdown. They didn't, of course, replay it at the stadium, but he had that touchdown pass to Isaac Frichte, which got taken back because they said there was holding on the play, which we couldn't believe because it seemed like it happened so fast there wasn't time for holding. But other than that, I thought Max looked good. He was threatening. He was completing passes overall and keeping them honest. And boy, if Kirkwood's going to keep running for 100 yards a game, I mean, it's the offense will click along.
Yeah, I mean the thing with Shortell is it's you're in a good situation, I think, in major college football when you're backup quarterback can come in a situation like this and not make mistakes that hurt you. And certainly, you know, Max didn't set the world on fire, but I mean, he did complete just over 50% of his pass, 200 yards. He did enough to keep us in the game. Like you mentioned, could have been a little bit better with the touchdowns. You know, he did get robbed of one, but, you know, didn't throw any interceptions, didn't put us in any really bad situations. He did have the sacks, but, you know, certainly better than, you know, seeing him scramble and lose a fumble or throw a ball into a defender's arms or something like that. So, you know, hopefully that gives him some confidence to go into Iowa this year when he was thrown into a hostile environment in Michigan. Obviously didn't go well. That wasn't totally his fault, certainly. But, you know, hopefully a little bit more confidence, knows the receivers a little bit better because he's had more time with them. The offensive line seems to be starting to gel a little bit. So, you know, I think we got out of Max exactly what we should expect from a backup quarterback and a guy who's still growing and learning how to be a Big Ten QB.
Back in the podcast, rolling along here. It's that time where we talk with someone from the opposition. You don't get much of a more hated opposition than the Iowa Hawkeyes. And from the wildly popular Blackheart Gold Pants blog, we have one of the founders, Patrick Vince, who's been kind enough to come on with us. Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Man, do I hate you guys.
Well, welcome to it. It's hate week, after all. It's a different spin for us. We're not used to having the better record coming into this game.
You're not used to having the pig, the better record, and everything else going in your favor. And I'm going to tell you from experience, that's not a good place to be in.
I got to ask you, your choice of drink to drown away your sorrows this year, has it been bourbon, beer, or Drano? Which one's been working for you?
It had been bourbon. We went straight to the absinthe after that Central Michigan game. But bourbon's usually the drink of choice when we lose to Iowa State, and we've had so much experience with that I've been able to actually put together a formal drink menu.
Yeah, Gopher fans, really, we just name the drink, we can probably take care of it for you when it comes to trying to figure out what the hell's going on with our program for usual. So at this point, we're pretty much just, I don't know, we're not even smoking anything and we're high as a kite with the way the season's gone. We're at this point, we're not even trying to figure out what's going on. We're just going to enjoy it while it lasts, but.
You should. You absolutely should.
So we're. I'll put this as delicately as I can. What the hell is going on down there? You know, you guys are 2-2. I don't think anyone expected this to exactly be a juggernaut Hawkeye team, but I don't think anybody expected you guys to have this kind of start. What is going on in Iowa City?
It's a combination of a really young team and a semi disorganized and semi-dysfunctional staff change. We lost both coordinators for the first time in Kirk Ferentz's time here. So since 1999, he'd had the same coordinators and basically the same staff. He lost two coordinators and a position coach. He shuffled everybody around, and I think everybody's kind of running a little bit blind to a certain extent. He brought in Greg Davis from Texas, formerly from Texas. He'd been fired from Texas, which is always a good sign for your offensive coordinator. And Davis's system, I don't think it's particularly compatible with what Ferentz wants to do. At least it wasn't early on. They do seem to be scoring a few points now that's on a halfback. We didn't expect a ton going into this year. It's a young team. It was a team that would be primed to win 5 games if it weren't for getting a really easy schedule. Problem is, the easy schedule was supposed to be September. And so it might be a 5-win team now anyway. They always do seem to find a way with a team like this to start winning a couple of games they shouldn't win in late October or November, but right now it's still a struggle. So that's Iowa in a nutshell at this point.
Do you see Davis is just trying to figure it out and get it better? I don't want to say he's like the offensive version of a Kevin Cosgrove, but a guy who had a name from a big school and is supposed to come in and do things. But I know at Texas, since Colt McCoy left him, he didn't do much with him. And now so far, he's certainly, it seems like he's almost made Vandenberg worse, which has been surprising. Your running game's been all right, but the passing game's been there. What are your thoughts on Davis so far?
I was skeptical of Davis coming in. The Cosgrove reference is kind of funny for being as accurate as it might possibly be. A guy who I think everybody would have been really ecstatic to have him if he would have come a year earlier. But after getting canned at Texas, taking a year off and not really getting anybody to come to his door after the year off even, I mean, he was essentially, Iowa was like the last offensive coordinator job left in like, you know, Division I football. And nobody had picked Davis up yet at that point. So it really wasn't that the people were knocking down his door to give him a new job. And his system, Texas fans refer to it as the horizontal offense, which is pretty accurate. But he also runs a lot of option routes with receivers and tight ends that I don't think we've ever run before. And I'm pretty certain our receivers and our quarterback have no idea what to do with. It's a lot of read the guy who's defending you and go where he's not, but they have to be on the same page on where that is. And I think in a lot of cases they haven't been. And when they are, because it's such a short route offense, you're only getting 3-4 yards anyway. So it's not as if there's a big gain on the successes and on the failures. You're getting absolutely nothing or your quarterback's getting killed. So, I think I'm willing to give him some more time, and I think it's going to be a long year this year, and I think Ferentz probably looking to next year as a possible time to get this thing rolling. But Davis himself, I've not been particularly impressed with at this point. It's complicated also by the fact that Ferentz still wants to run this big kind of power zone running game that he's always run, and running, you know, with a fullback and two tight ends is completely anathema to what Davis wants to do with three wide and a tight end or four wide. And so you don't disguise plays at all, because all the pass plays come from passing formations, all the run plays come from running formations, and everybody knows exactly what you're going to do the moment you line up.
But other than that, it's going well so far. I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah. But aside from that, it's looking how was the show. But
yeah, well, yeah, like that. I mean, but I've been surprised. Really, it's been Vandenberg's been the surprise for me, because, I mean, he was popular in Iowa City last year. But outside of that, he really flew under the radar as one of the better quarterbacks in the Big Ten last year. And I know they lost McNutt, but, you know, the passing game seems like it struggled. Do you pin that just on trying to make the transition to Davis's offense and maybe not having, you know, the playmaker at receiver like McNutt out there?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. Vandenberg was pretty good last year. Vandenberg was a lot better because Marvin McNutt was there to catch everything that was thrown his way. And he doesn't really have that safety blanket anymore. They were thinking it would be the tight end, CJ Fedorowicz. That really hasn't worked out. Fedorowicz is a great athlete, and everybody salivates over him. But the numbers have never really been there. And there's a certain – the coaches kind of hint at work ethic stuff occasionally with him. And regardless of what it is, he just doesn't really seem to produce that much. His receivers, there's Keenan Davis, who was a four-star recruit, but was kind of – has never really, you know, pulled it together in the way you expect from a four-star receiver. Big kid, kind of a Michigan sort of – like Lloyd Carr, Michigan receiver, which doesn't really fit two-yard – curl patterns particularly well when you're supposed to be getting yards after catch, because he's not a guy who's got great acceleration. The best receiver on the team is a two-star kid they got out of, I think, Texas a couple years ago, named Kevontae Martin Manley, who they used sparingly last year, but really seems to fit the mold of what they want to do now. And he seems to be rounding into form, which has helped the last couple weeks. They put some points on the board in the last couple of games. But yeah, not having McNutt there has certainly hurt Vandenberg, and not really being that familiar with the system hasn't helped either.
Kind of a personal question, but I'll ask it. How big is your shrine to the angry Iowa running back hating God? Do you use pig's blood? Is there anything specific you have in there to try and wield them off? I shouldn't ask that, but I will.
I'm going to – when are you guys posting this? So I got some news I could break for you.
I don't think it's going up until tomorrow, but
Okay. Well, I'll let you know. There are plans afoot for an angry Iowa running back hating God, like, celebration, like, airbag fest that we're going to hold for Penn State weekend. With a pinata. Because we had to get an airbag pinata. There's no other way around it. We wanted to blow something up, but the Coralville Fire Department wouldn't let us. So yes, the shrine is, we've kind of come to the point where it's no longer trying to deny the existence of it and no longer being angry at his anger. It's now just accepting the fact that he exists and that he's always going to be a part of our lives. And much like the Aztecs sacrificing, virgins and goats to their gods, we shall do the same.
Like a pinata is a good place to start. That seems like something to at least appease them for a couple of weeks. That's got to keep them off your back. I mean, are they coaching at the point now where they have to warn the recruits, like, hey, probably 50-50 chance or better, you're going to get arrested or blow your ACL out or just get kicked off the team? Oh, we'd love to have you. We're just putting this out there, like some kind of a waiver they have to sign.
Yeah, if you're a Big Ten coach and you're not negative recruiting Iowa on every running back that they're after, you're not doing your job right. I mean, it seems incredibly coincidental, but it's amazingly coincidental. You have to at least think that there's something going on there.
Yeah, after a while, once you get to the 15th or 16th one, that's when it's like, okay, maybe there's something here going on, Brad. But yeah, you guys – but they still, they still keep doing it. I mean, Wiseman's been a revelation. They have, over 6 yards of carry, and Bullock's done decently well when he's hasn't been hurt. But, I mean, it's somehow they still keep putting a running game together despite being on, like, option 18 or 19 for the running back depth chart.
Yeah, and it's a lot. I mean, it goes to Ferentz and offensive line play. I mean, he's always been able to build a line of whatever he's got. There's only been 1 year in 12 that they've really had – just genuinely terrible offensive line play. And that was the year of unimaginable pain, 2007, which we're about to, I think, duplicate. But they always are able to cobble together a line, and they can get somebody who can run behind those guys and fall forward and get 4 yards of carry and occasionally find a hole and go for more. Weissman's been fantastic. And there's a long line of Iowa – big Iowa running backs who fans love. There's a guy named Nick Bell back in the early 90s that Hayden Fry used.
I remember Nick Bell.
About 6'3", 245. It should have been playing linebacker and was playing halfback and just ran people. It wasn't great. I mean, ran for 800 yards in his senior year, but certainly everybody loved him and still talks about him to this day. Sean Green was the same way. People would love Sean Green regardless, but they really loved him because he was a bruiser who would run people over. And Wiseman's going to save the season if he keeps it up. I mean, if not actually winning more games, then at least giving people something to be a little hopeful about while everything kind of falls apart. They find guys like that all the time, and it's a credit to the staff, and it's credit to the dumb luck of Iowa halfbacks.
If the first 4 weeks of the Big Ten season has proven anything, it's probably that the Mayans were right and this is the last college football we'll get as the world we're in, considering Northwestern and Minnesota are the undefeated teams in the Legends or East Division, and everyone else is struggling. I'll be honest, I hate Iowa football more than Wisconsin, but I hate Brett Bielema more than probably anything on earth, so I got to say I've really, really enjoyed the struggles that Wisconsin's having so far.
Preacher to the choir on that one.
Oh, man. It's the same thing, though. They had the big coordinator shift, except that Bielema took it a step further and thought, we've had a running game and a blocking scheme that's worked since 1990. Let's change it. Let's just bring something else in entirely. I bet that would work well. And then we fire our offensive line coach after 2 weeks. It could not happen to a nicer guy.
I'm just going to say that there's that commercial that they have. First off, it's a commercial that starts with Kirk Ferentz, which is not exactly the thing you want to put out there if you're the Big Ten. But there's that Big Ten football commercial that they play on BTN, and Bielema looks a little more bloated than usual. I think he's really taking this season hard.
I've said it's Gopher fans. I feel like that game at the end of October with Wisconsin can't come fast enough because I'm just worried they're going to figure it out and be back to the Wisconsin of old by then. But
about right.
With as rough a season as you guys have had thus far, at the same time, no one else has been very good either, and we're just starting conference play. I feel like as a Gopher fan – I want to get excited that maybe this is a year we do big things, but it's just like everyone else has been so up and down, it's pretty much impossible to pick it at this point, except that we know Ohio State's not doing anything because they're ineligible.
Right. And I, you know, if Ohio State was eligible, I think everybody would basically concede that the conference was theirs to lose. As it is, I'm with you. I don't know exactly what to think of anything. The only saving grace for a team like Michigan State is, you know, at least they lost to a team, you know, a pretty solid football team. Same thing for Michigan. They lost to two pretty solid football teams, but they didn't look very good in the process. You know, I think you can find a bit of a silver lining in Michigan State and still consider them a possible favorite, but they haven't looked particularly good even in their wins. I don't think Boise was anything that was, you know, the usual Boise that you're used to seeing. Quite frankly, I mean, you look at the schedules, you look at what teams have done so far. Minnesota and Northwestern are right there. We do our blog poll based solely on resume to date, and there's a clump of teams, Ohio State, Michigan State, Minnesota, Northwestern, all between, you know, basically 17 and 31 that all kind of have the exact same resume in front of them at the moment and all could certainly, you know, be in play at the end of the year.
The game Saturday, it's hate week. It's the annual tradition for Lloyd. Floyd's doing very well, by the way. Want you to know he's very well kept. Says he's enjoying the new digs. Really is feeling great about where he's at. So just thought, you know,
I saw a picture of him today. It's your practice field looking away from the practice field. And I couldn't blame him. I mean, I wouldn't want to watch that crap either. But, yeah, I see that he is still, you know, functioning. So that's good. We appreciate that.
You're jealous of the redheaded stepchild quarterback that we've got who's going to come down and complete some passes on you. I think that's probably what it is. So.
That's exactly what it is. I really wish we had a ginger quarterback.
Listen, everybody wants a gingivitis quarterback. It's the new rage that's kind of in the nation. We're starting it. What can we say? We're trendsetters. It's what we do. That fucking do the gopher dance that they have to do on the screen. I hope you guys have seen that already. It's fantastic. But
yes, we have. Between, you know, basically it's like Murray War Math and now ginger quarterback. That's your trend setting.
It's good times is what it is. So we're at a point where the defense last week, like honestly, it's the first time I can remember where I watched a Gopher defense and actually expected them to do well, and they did. So I'm almost feeling like there's got to be the other shoe dropping here at this point. I mean, I haven't felt better about a Gopher team in a while, but at the same time, it's the Iowa game. Anything can happen. As much as I want to talk trash here, it's a little hard because I know things in this rivalry never seem to go as they should.
Yeah, weird stuff happens here. For one, I think after last week, you guys' chance of using an onside kick against us is probably a little bit lower. We should possibly see that coming.
You're telling me there's a chip.
Yeah, so I guarantee it'll work when you do it. That's exactly how it'll end up happening. I won't say that Minnesota's beat some real world beaters here. I mean, UNLV, Syracuse, Western Michigan, but then again, we've lost to a couple teams that are worse than that. So I got to tip my hat to you at this point. I can't believe the line itself. I mean, I think Iowa's a 6-point favorite, which is nuts. I thought they would be a dog, frankly.
I thought maybe it'd be, you know, 3 points for home field advantage for Iowa, but I was surprised by, for the extra field goal. But it's Vegas makes money on these things, or they're supposed to, or at least except when, like, the Packers and Seahawks and crooked referees are involved, in which case they probably end up losing a lot. But for games like this, I don't know, it's now the 6.1, and it's like, well, I like it, but at the same time, I'm a Gopher fan, and I'm used to being, you know, kicked in the nuts when things are looking at its best, so it's... We're trying to be cautiously optimistic, but I mean, what's the feeling in Iowa City this week with the Gophers coming to town?
Oh, people are jumping off of buildings. I mean, they lost to Central Michigan last week. Everybody is fully expecting Minnesota to come in and kick Iowa's ass. I haven't talked to anybody right, at least it's only Tuesday, so it's early on in the grieving process. But I haven't talked to anybody who's been like, you know what, I really think we're gonna beat Minnesota. Everybody I've talked to said they want to sell their tickets and never go to this game because they don't want to watch Minnesota walk out of Kinnick with the pig.
It looks like folks are getting a little rough. I mean, are you guys selling Blackheart gold pants embroidered like pitchforks and torches or anything? Have you guys thought about a line of that kind of stuff?
You know what? I think we could. I haven't advocated it except for in moments of drunken anger on Twitter. But I think we could sell a lot of Fire Farron shirts right now. It's not a position I take, but I think we could sell a lot of them.
Is it justified? I mean, should he be on the hot seat right now, or is it one of those deals where you're going to have a down year like this every once in a while, especially with, as you said, you know, the coaching change, which doesn't happen very often there? What are your thoughts on Ferentz and where the problem is?
We did a post last year talking about the fact that he kind of works on a 5-year cycle. There's a peak year, there's a disappointing year, there's a year where they got to get rid of all the seniors who couldn't play in front of the seniors who just got done. And then they kind of rebuild from there, and the rebuild season's this year, and it's supposed to be the tough one. So there's a certain amount of, we knew it was coming. We'll take our medicine. We'll get better and use all these young guys down the line when they've got a little more experience. But any talk of him being on the hot seat is absurd, only because his contract is so huge that the state of Iowa can never possibly buy him out. I mean, he's got a $21 million buyout. As of this year. So there's no way that they could ever even entertain getting rid of him. He's basically a Paterno without the, you know, Paterno just saying, I'm going to stay. Don't even ask if he's going to stay or go. He's just going to stay for as long as he wants to make all that money. If he didn't have that, I think there'd be a little bit of discussion of it just because he's been here for so long and they've had one real good year since 2004. But essentially he's a slightly more successful Ron Zook over the last decade, but that that doesn't really mean a whole lot. So, any talk of him really being on a hot seat just doesn't understand the situation.
All right. So, Gophers haven't won in Kinnick since 1999. They haven't taken 3 in a row in the series, I think, since at least that long. How do you see the game going Saturday?
I'm going to tell you something here. This is all karma. It had nothing to do with actual game stuff. So, that game in 99, Iowa was 1-10 that year. And it was a really, really cold November day. I was a freshman at Iowa when that happened. And a couple of friends and I had decided that we were going to go to a bar and watch the game rather than go sit out in the cold. And at halftime of that game, Iowa was ahead. And we all immediately decided to leave the bar and get down to the stadium and watch the second half. And you really could do that because there was nobody really going to the game in 1999. So we left, we went to the game, and a little used wide receiver who was actually a track guy that just played wide receiver for us during the football season named Bashir Yamini dropped about 5 passes in that second half, and Iowa lost by, I think, 7 or 10. I was at Kinnick 2 weeks ago, and it was the Iowa University of Iowa Hall of Fame induction weekend. And it brought out like the five guys and gals who were getting inducted into the Hall of Fame for this class. And the 5th guy up was Bashir Yamini for track, not for football. That's karma right there. Bashir's coming back to completely screw us on this game. So when I saw that, I thought, this is not good for Minnesota, and I still firmly believe that. I do think Iowa will win based solely on the paper and solely on my faith in the team. But I don't have a whole lot to work with on that. It's going to be high scoring if Iowa's going to win, I really do think. I don't think that our defense is going to be particularly effective against Shortell. Your offense looks like something that could really give them trouble. So I'll go ahead and say that Iowa wins 34-31, but that's a complete guess based solely on the fact that I can't possibly fathom losing to Minnesota again.
3 years in a row. I forgot to tell you too that you need to be afraid of all our white speed receivers that we got out there. You got to fear the whiteies that are running around. You know,
you stole them all from us.
I know.
It happens all the time, and now they're all in Minnesota.
You guys thought you cornered the market on Tim DeWight. Nope, we got whiteys too. Watch out. They're coming. They're coming to get you in their college footballs.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it. Believe me, speed receivers of all types, all shapes and sizes, have been killing us for the last couple of years. So I'm sure we'll be equally adept against them as well.
Well, it's hate week. I'm looking forward to it. God, I hope they win. Three in a row would be fantastic. I really think Floyd belongs in Minnesota, but again, I'm not bold enough or arrogant enough to say that this is going to be a cakewalk or an easy win or any of that. I think it's going to be tough, and I just hope it comes out the Gophers' way, because it always seems like, as I said, that things go strangely in this series when it looks like it shouldn't.
Yes. I would agree with you completely. I'll just let you know, we've still got chunks of your goalpost.
Yes, you do, as you guys try to take it out in pieces. But, up the stadium stairs, Brad Banks, the whole thing. I hate that. My worst football memory at 2-2 was that, and was 58 or 55 donut or 58 donut at the Metrodome. I was one of four Gopher fans that actually stayed to the end. It's that's why I feel like karma's got to come back in our favor a little bit after that. But
you know what? I've been to two Iowa Minnesota games in the Metrodome, and those were the two I was at.
It's good they don't play there anymore. That's all I got to say.
Yes, it is.
Well, Patrick, I'll let you get back to the Drano or the bourbon or whatever you got there, and get yourself prepared for the game on Saturday. We appreciate the time.
Thanks. Wish you the absolute worst of luck, and I hope you all die.
Thanks to Patrick Vince from Blackheart Gold Pants for being on with us. And again, we'll keep the hate week love rolling. It's, JD, it's hate week, and I'll say it again. Feels a little strange to be the team that comes in with the better record. We're, of course, not favored in Vegas, as we talked about off the top, but I feel like we've definitely played better, maybe deserve to be favored, but... This feels a lot better than, say, the 55 donut or 58 donut in the Dome or the goalpost game or anything else. That's the stuff I carry with me when I think of hate week and just how much I want the Gophers to win on Saturday.
Right. No, that's, yeah, absolutely. All the Kinnick North talk and all that kind of stuff. I think for sure we can keep that behind us for a little while. Fun.
I was just going to say, we haven't heard much Kinnick North talk on the new stadium, because has Iowa won TCF Bank Stadium yet?
No, they sure haven't.
No, I think they're 0-2 there.
0-2.
It is. Oh, yeah, it is. Gophers have not won at Kinnick since 1999. You probably see that stat thrown all over the place. I believe, if memory serves, is also the last time they won three in a row was during that stretch. So this... a chance to right some wrongs, as it were, if they've got a big one this weekend. They're certainly not overconfident down in Hawkeye land with the way things have gone. But I'll say I'm expecting a close game, and I think with their ability to run the football, somehow they're doing it again. They pull guys off the street or push like Sean Green out of furniture stores, wherever else they find them. But now they got a fullback who's running a ball well, and that's maybe the one department where the Gopher defense can improve a little bit. So I think it's going to be something that'll be tough to stop for the Hawkeyes.
Well, it's true. Here's the thing about Wiseman. Wiseman has really only played in two games. He played against Central Michigan, and he played against Northern Iowa. And just so we're clear on who those two teams are, Northern Iowa is an FCS team. And Central Michigan is a team that gives up 195 yards a game rushing. So wasn't exactly facing the best or the biggest rushing defenses in the country with the production he's had through those two games. Now, having said that, he is a fullback, and I've been saying since week one that if there's a problem that this defense has, it's that we give up too many yards up the middle. UNLV, New Hampshire, absolutely everybody has found a way to gouge us for 5, 6, 7, 8 yards at a time up the middle. So I would fully expect that the Hawkeyes are going to come out and try to ride Wiseman as much as they can. And hopefully Tracy Clays has seen that this Iowa offense has not done well against any defense they've faced. They certainly have not faced a defense with the talent and the front four that we have. So hopefully those guys can begin to make a transition and actually do something in the run game as well.
Yeah, we were asking. I think for me, it's the puzzling part for Iowa has been the passing game, because Vandenberg was pretty good last year. I think he was third in the conference in passing efficiency. And this year, they just flat stunk throwing the football. Part of it, I know, is that they lost Marvin McNutt and just haven't had anybody to play, but they don't have a big play downfield guy that they've been able to go to. And they've had trouble throwing, which is, you know, fantastic. I applaud that. That plays right into the hands of our defense, who have done pretty well with it, trying to get in their faces. But yeah, it's gonna be finding ways to clog the middle. You know, seeing some run blitzing, getting something done. Because yeah, I think you're absolutely right. At home, knowing that's what they do well, they're gonna try and ride Wiseman for as long as they possibly can.
Yeah, and like you said, they have to. Their passing game has not been good. Vandenberg has. Central Michigan. So, you know, they have not been able to get much going from an offensive standpoint. You know, the one BCS conference defense that they did face was Iowa State, who beat them, and they only got 6 points on them. So, you know, I have not broken down Iowa State's defense by any means, but I'm certainly hopeful that that we have a better defense than Iowa State. I can absolutely, you know, I can say that I feel much more confident about our defense going into this game, going into a hostile environment, than I think I ever have with the Gophers walking into Kinnick.
Yeah, it's, you know, the backup quarterback. Do you worry much about Shortell and his first start on the road? I mean, he looked very good at home. His other appearance, obviously, in the Western Michigan, also a home start. Do you worry about the road factor, especially a place that could be as hostile as Kinnick, getting to him at all?
You know, I think you have to. I think you have to worry about that because, you know, he's had it I don't want to say he's had it easy, but – you know, he came in to a game against New Hampshire that we were winning easily. He came into a game against Western Michigan where we completely flipped the script. Dominated, but really were able to do things on offense that we hadn't done to that point. And then last week against Syracuse, I mean, like we said, didn't set the world on fire, but absolutely didn't do anything to hurt us. So I think that's what we need to be able to expect from Max going into Kinnick. Yeah, it's a hostile environment. Yeah, he's got to sit in that stupid pink locker room for 3 hours before the game, but he's got some experience now. I think even last year we saw it as a freshman, and certainly now this year with more playing time, He's much more composed, I think. Rattled. The team has certainly grown accustomed to having Floyd around the locker room. I know that Shortell was recruited a bit by Iowa, so he's got a little bit of skin in the game as far as wanting to be able to beat them as well. So, you know, if he can go in and play a game like he did last week, you know, not throw any interceptions. Don't put the ball on the ground. You know, put up, you know, 200 yards through the air and do enough from a passing standpoint to be able to open up the run game and allow us to move the ball a little bit. I think that will be a good thing for Max. And again, you know, it's difficult to talk about expectations of a backup quarterback, but I think based on what we've seen, we should be able to expect that from Max at this point.
Yeah, I'm also interested to see who else carries the football. Danelle Kirkwood, 28 carries. The next closest guy, or the guy with the second most carries, KJ May, believe it or not, 6 carries, yeah. 17 yards. Yeah. He didn't catch a pass. There was no James Gillum on Saturday, and I didn't hear anything about him injured. I wonder if he's fallen down the depth chart a little bit, or if the coaches aren't seeing enough from him. You know, he was a guy who got a lot of carries in JUCO, and we were hoping was going to come in and be the man. Danelle stepped into that spot very nicely, but they're going to need a second back, so I'm going to be interested to see if that's going to be KJ May again, if they're going to give Gillum another shot, or who else is it going to be? Because obviously Max is not the running threat Marquise is and doesn't really need to be when he brings the passing game. but going to need to see another back step up to try and help Danelle in the running game.
Yeah, that would be really a good thing. And you know, you mentioned Gillum, and that's really interesting. Like, that guy has really fallen off the face of the earth. I mean, he's at this point, he's the running back version of Hale Carpenter. I mean, it's just the guy has completely disappeared, and when he has been in there, he just really hasn't done anything. So you have to wonder if maybe there's been some issues with him on the practice field too. But obviously Kirkwood has really separated himself from the pack, obviously. He's been productive. He's been durable. We haven't really had to ride him too much. You know, I was looking at Weissman's stats today in the two games that he's played, and I think he had 24 and 27 carries in those two games. And Kirkwood is you know, averaging under 20 carries a game. And part of that is because the passing offense there's been enough of a passing offense that we can keep some kind of balance there. But, you know, you're right. This is a team, this is a coaching staff that wants to be a run first type of offense. They want to be a team that establishes the run and has everything else feed off of that. And if that's going to be the case, another running back is going to have to start to emerge, because, you know, Kirkwood has had some injury problems in the past, and we certainly don't want to get into a situation where we've got to find somebody if something, heaven forbid, does happen to him.
Receiving wise, the outside guys were good again. Barker, another four catches for 52 yards as he continues to lead the world in being white speed receivers. Devin Crawford, Tufts had a very nice game, 3 for 67. That's a guy I know both you and I liked before the season, and everybody really. I mean, he had his big coming out party against Iowa with a 100-yard game last year. And Frickty had only one catch for 34 yards. Again, should have had that second one, but it was called back in the touchdown. The guy that I'm a bit surprised about, though, is that Marcus Jones, they're not finding more ways to get him the ball. He only had 2 for 24. He wasn't utilized much against Western Michigan. It's a guy I'd like to see them try and do a little more with, just because he's so dangerous and probably the Gophers' most dangerous guy after the catch once he gets the ball.
Yeah, and, you know, I was thinking about that as well. A.J. May hasn't been used really in the passing game yet. You know, just a few carries for him so far. But, you know, you have to wonder with a guy like Marcus Jones, if, you know, he's probably typically on most plays, I would assume, not going to be. Ray wasn't necessarily very good at running through those progressions. We think that Max is better at being able to do that, but he's still a young quarterback. He still probably doesn't get those through those progressions too quickly. So, you know, if you're talking about a guy who's a third, fourth option on any given play, very possible that Shortell isn't even going to get to him. So, I would like to see them utilize him in the offense more to find some ways to get his speed and, you know, whether it be a jet sweep or something, to get him and a guy like May some carries, some speed, where all of a sudden you get a guy in space, you get a block or two, you can really bust something like that wide open. We haven't seen the Gophers have to go to many gimmicky type plays yet to get some momentum or anything like that. This week against a team like Iowa going into Kinnick, that could be a week where we start to see some of those things take shape.
Yeah, let's hope so. As I said, I think the offense could be able to move the ball on Iowa. I think we're going to be able to score some points, kind of like last week against Syracuse, and we'll see how the defense is able to handle Weissman and the other guys. Injury updates, looks like just three that Coach Kill had mentioned. Doesn't sound like Marquise is going to play, and I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. Doesn't sound like Shabazz is going to be back, which is too bad. I know not a big passing attack from Iowa, but he had played so very good in those first two games. It'd be nice to get him back as your nickel corner. But it sounds like Tommy Olsen is banged up, and that's a key guy in your interior line. They've already had to do some shuffling there, moving Epping inside to center, which has been a good move, giving Caleb Bach a chance to go. But Tommy Olsen, a real anchor on that left side, a young kid, still just a sophomore. But, boy, against Iowa, that's a guy I would love to have, and I hope he's ready to go for Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's the bye week probably is going to come at a good time for us because those offensive linemen, they've been asked to do a lot. They're beat up. So hopefully we can get through this game, get those guys a week off to be able to heal up a little bit because they're going to have to be ready. We got to have those horses ready when we get into the meat of the Big Ten schedule, when we start to face some bigger defensive lines on a weekly basis.
Yeah, it's coming up. It's getting into it now, the big September, but everything turns around as we start playing each other and we get into conference play the rest of the way. A lot can change here. The Gophers off to a great start. Iowa not so much, but all that can change with just one game on Saturday. I'm seeing, you know, the last two times they played, scores have been under 30 points each. I think it was 27-24 and 22-21 Minnesota victories. I'm, of course, going to see another Gopher victory in this one, but I think it's another close one, maybe like a 24-20 score, something going to be a little more lower scoring and close right down to the end.
Yeah, I predicted in my little I hate week back and forth piece with Mike Jones over at Off Tackle Empire today. I predicted a Gopher win at 17-13. I think it's going to be a defensive struggle. I don't see the Iowa offense being able to do too much on that Gopher defense. Hopefully they don't find too much success in the running game. But the Iowa defense has been fairly stout. And I'm still not convinced that we've got enough of a balanced attack that we can really move the ball on a consistent basis facing a Big Ten defense. I think a 17-13 type game is about what we're going to see. Obviously, I'd love to see the Gopher defense really shut down the Hawkeyes and hold them under 10, or the Gopher offense to really come alive and begin to open things up. But I'm just not confident that those things are necessarily going to happen. So I think it's going to be closer than we like, and it's going to be a lower scoring game than we like.
Yeah, I think those are both good things. As I said, I'm cautiously optimistic for this one. It's Iowa. Crazy things happen in this rivalry all the time. If they were playing Northwestern, if they were playing Purdue, if it was Illinois, if it was somebody else who'd kind of been off to that same start, I would probably feel even better about it. But because it's Iowa, because it's Haitley, because it's rivalries, because it's Floyd, hard to get too overconfident here, and I definitely don't think Jerry Kill's going to let that happen. Kickoff, it's an early one. It's on, I believe, ESPN2, is it not? I thought I heard that today. It's not a Big Ten Network game. They're moving it to ESPN2, so a sort of primetime early matchup, as it were.
That's correct.
Sort of. Yeah, sort of, kind of. Okay, so see, I am hearing things. All right, well, anything else we need to contribute we didn't touch on, we need to discuss here as we wrap up the Hate Week Iowa podcast?
I don't think so. I'm just so get here that I'm anxious to see what this team can do against another Big Ten team.
Yeah, it's time. We've seen it against a pretty solid BCS program. We've seen it against a solid MAC program. Now it's time to see it against the Big Ten and our biggest rivals. So it's an 11 a.m. kickoff. Floyd will make the trip down. Hopefully we'll be making the trip back. Check it out on ESPN2. KFan, if you're listening to it on the radio. Check out JD's piece on Off Tackle Empire. It's a good one in the back and forth there. Of course, we'll have more Hate Week stuff to wrap up the week. So, yeah, it's a big one. We're excited for it. It's a little earlier in the year than we're used to with Iowa, but bring it on. It's time, and it could be a big, big statement game for the Gophers. So that'll wrap it up for us. Thanks for listening. Thanks again to Patrick from Black Heart Gold Pants for being on. As always, get that hate boiling in your heart for the Hawkeyes. Kickoff is just a few days away. I am Jeff Frick. He is JD. And as always, stay classy and go Gophers.
We hate Iowa.